Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Major General Elder Granger, Deputy Director, TRICARE Management Activity. Also joining us in our conversation is Russ Sanford, partner in IBM's DoD consulting practice. General, could you elaborate on the different benefit packages and plan eligibility provided under the TRICARE program? And in what ways does the TRICARE program differ from its predecessor program called CHAMPUS?
Well, first of all, let me go through the programs. We have what is called TRICARE Prime. This is where you enroll to a primary care provider, and you can select from a menu of providers at our military treatment facilities or, in some cases, in our TRICARE Management Activity Network, with our managed care support providers. In this program, we have approximately 5.2 out of 9 million beneficiaries enrolled in this program. That's the first program. The second program is what we call TRICARE Extra, whereby there is a network that's been established by our managed care support contractors. And if you go to those providers that's in that network, you get a discount in terms of your care or your cost sharing or copay that you have to provide. The other program is what we call TRICARE for Life. And this program was established for our TRICARE beneficiaries over the age of 65. It's a combined program with the Center for Medicare and Medicaid, whereby once you become age 65 or prior to becoming age 65, you enroll in Medicare Part B, and Medicare pays 80%, TRICARE pays 20% of those coverage that is covered by TRICARE or both by TRICARE and Medicare from that standpoint. The third program is what we call TRICARE Plus, and TRICARE Plus is where if you're over the age of 65, you can enroll in the MTF based on space available. The military treatment facilities, the MTF, will say that, look, we have space for X number of those over the age of 65, and they can stay with the military treatment facility beyond the age of 65. We have approximately 169 individuals enrolled in our TRICARE Plus program. For our TRICARE for Life program, it's about 1.6 million beneficiaries. The other program is what we call the U.S. Family Health Plan. It's approximately close to 100,000, and that is located along the East Coast, and was designed to be a replacement for our old public health service hospitals. We do have one located down in the Texas area. But that program consists of, once you're in that program, it's a capitated program in terms of costs. You are not allowed to participate in any other programs. You cannot go to a military treatment facility. You know, emergency, we'll see you. But everything's provided by this program. It enrolled active duty family members, retired members and their families, as well as those over the age of 65. We also have approximately 34,000 enrolled in our TRICARE Reserve Select program, which has been going on since we started the Operation Enduring Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom. And the last is about 2.2 million beneficiaries in what we call TRICARE Standard. And this is just, they go out and it's almost like fee for service. And they have a copay, and they have a deductible, and there's a maximum amount we pay in terms of catastrophic cap. And that catastrophic cap is $3,000 for those individuals. But those are the major programs. There are a few other programs. We have the Active Duty Dental Program, which is about 1.7 million beneficiaries. We have the Active Duty Family Member Program, which is about 1.8. And there's something unique. The third program is the TRICARE Retiree Dental Program. It is 100% covered by the retirees enrolled in this program on a premium base. This is strictly now to the United States, but we just put in a proposal to expand this program over the next year to overseas. But those are our major programs.
General, you talked about Operation Iraqi Freedom, and earlier we talked about 9/11. Certainly, given the global war on terrorism, I'm curious, how has the level of operational tempo impacted TRICARE's ability to manage and maintain healthcare services to its members, and has it created challenges around funding, staffing, or technology?
Let me just talk about that. Well, first of all, that's the whole idea years ago when we established, went from having 12 or 13 TRICARE regions down to three. We had to have a buffer whereby if we could not take care in our military treatment facility, we call the direct care system, there's a robust, what we call TRICARE network. And that consists of right now over 200,000 providers, something like 50,000 hospitals. And you look at it from our TRICARE pharmacy program, over 55,000 pharmacies throughout the country. That program has the flexibility to expand. If we can't take care of it in our military treatment facilities, it can expand and serve as that catcher's mitt, coordinated integrated healthcare system for the TRICARE management activity. So from an operational standpoint, our managed care support contractors and partners have been in step with us, and they've given us that expansion capability. From a budgetary standpoint, have there been some budgetary challenges? Absolutely, yes. But from that standpoint, Congress and our senior leadership have been very supportive of getting us the resources we need to not only support the ongoing operation, but in addition, making sure we have what we need to support our men and women on the battlefield from the point of injury, whether it be using an electronic healthcare record, handheld devices, using the latest technology in terms of blood products, et cetera, all the way to our first level four, as we call it, the level five, Lonsdu, all the way back to the Walter Reed, Bethesda's and Brooke Army Medical Centers and Wolford Hall and Balboa's and other major medical centers throughout our country. So to summarize this, we have the managed care support contractor to assist the direct care system, and 70% right now of the health care we provide is out in the private sector in terms of managed care support contractors. We have internally our electronic health care record to get data to flow from point of injuries using technology all the way back to integrating and sending information electronically to the VA using bidirectional health information exchange. And then with the managed care support contractors, if we send you out in the private sector, we have that integrated system. So from an operational standpoint, we have had a coordinated system to integrate what we're doing. Are there room for improvements? There's always room for improvements. That's what we're working on today.
General, a moment ago you spoke of the challenges you face because of the budget. With the health costs rising within your organization, they've doubled in the last 5 years from approximately $19 billion fiscal year 2001 to about $38 billion fiscal year 2006. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the initiatives that you've got underway to contain some of the costs associated with the delivery of the health care, such as savings on pharmaceutical expenditures, the TRICARE pharmacy formulary, new contracting strategies you're having for the TRICARE next generation of contracts? And then given those budget constraints, can you talk to us a little bit about just how do you ensure that the access of care and the quality of the care is going to be maintained for those beneficiaries that you're serving?
Well, first of all, let me go back to those five P's I spoke about earlier. In terms of making sure that we have what we need to take care of this population, how are we going to manage this population? I talked about people, and what we have on the paper, we're talking about disease management, managing diseases, whether it be diabetes, congestive heart failure, asthma. We've got a very nice demo going up in the north, west part or mid part of the United States, looking at obesity, tobacco use, decreasing the use of alcohol to a more or less a mild or moderate level. That's one way of managing our conditions. And we're basing this on evidence-based medicine, preventive type of activities. We're looking at the healthy population 2010 in terms of making sure you're getting your mammograms, pap smears, if you need a colonoscopy to try to detect early colon cancer or polyps. These are some of the preventive things we're putting in place. This is all based on standard of care, evidence-based medicine, high quality. That's one thing we're doing. The second thing is that we look at our claims process, the second PETA process. We're looking at, are we processing claims timely? And if so, as we use electronic claims process, can we get more bang for our buck by processing a claim electronically? It's cheaper than using paper. That's another issue. We're making sure that all of our contracts are performance-based with positive incentive if you perform well, as well as negative incentive if you don't perform well. This is all associated with quality, no question about it. We have access standards in terms of acute appointments within 24 hours, routine appointments within 30 days. We have all those access standards in place. And we're making sure that not only are we following, but our beneficiaries are educated on those access standards. So if I have to look at it, we're looking at providing good quality care. And we have quality metrics, annual report to Congress to validate that, access. And access is based on we survey our beneficiaries. We're asking them the question, are you getting the timely access? Were you happy with your providers? Were you happy with the staff inside of the clinic, whether it be in our military treatment facilities or one of our private contracts in terms of their clinics? We're looking at all those things. Now, what does this all mean in terms of budget? If you look at healthcare costs, in this country, we spend about $2.1 trillion on healthcare. And what are we doing to tackle it? From a military healthcare standpoint, we're putting all those things in place, improving quality, decreased cost based on evidence-based medicine. So if I had to summarize all this, disease management, having better performing contracts that are performance-based, having the right performance metrics in the contracts, and also serving our customers, listening to our customers. And the current thinking right now is it's got to be patient-centered, patient-focused care. If we do the entire cycle from the time you're about to have a chronic disease or develop one, we start managing during the entire process. Now, what does that mean in budget? Like most things, when healthcare started going up in the private sector, with 70% of our healthcare being in the private sector, the budgetary amounts got to flow with that too. If we just validate to our leadership that this is what we need in order to manage this population, they've yet to let us down.
You brought up a very interesting point. You said as the costs continue to rise, you've been able to go back and ask for additional monies to support that. But over the last 13 years, the TRICARE program has continued to enhance its benefits at a time when the private sector is shifting more of the cost of providing the medical care to its employee base. How has the effect of greater benefits for DoD beneficiaries coupled with the reduced benefits in the private sector led to an increase in military retirees to elect to drop, you know, their private coverage and switch back into the TRICARE programs? How are you managing? What strategies are you taking now to contain that or keep it in check? And then how are you coping or planning for the obvious increase in workload efforts associated with the program and the facilities that provide that care?
Well, let me answer this way. Last year, there was an attempt by the military healthcare system to answer a need on how do we sustain this great benefit. Because if you look over time, we brought on TRICARE Remote, TRICARE Prime Remote. We brought on the TRICARE Reserve Select Program. We brought on TRICARE for Life Program. We brought on a number of programs that the right thing to do. At the same time, we've got to make sure we're getting the budget to flow or increasing budget to follow those programs. If you look at our overall budget, the military healthcare system, we call the Defense Health Program budget, has basically the cost sharing that's been provided on a TRICARE program, a TRICARE Prime, has remained the same since 1995-96 time frame. At that point, the premiums we collected represented 24% to 28% of overall cost of the program. That adjustment has not been made at all since then. Now, there's a task force looking at an entire military healthcare system and saying, are we organized properly in terms of the leadership? Are we being more efficient and effective? And also one of the things they're looking at, are we being properly set up for success from a budgetary standpoint? So before I can further answer that question, we got to wait on what the task force is going to come out with recommendation. But at the end of the day, we are getting the resources we need to go forward, rather being supplemental in terms of the budget, to go forward. So we're hoping the task force will give us a lot of recommendations, not just whether or not how much you need to sustain this great benefit, but other things we need to look at too.
General, service members post-deployment now, especially in these areas of conflict, are returning with a lot of different conditions to include the post-traumatic stress syndrome and other mental health issues. Could you talk to us a little bit about what's going on in regards to TRICARE efforts to provide the proper care for those afflicted? What type of treatment options are being afforded to these individuals and what strategies are being developed to support them both in and outside of the TRICARE facilities? And then what's being done to look to recognize and manage the treatment? And are these benefits being afforded to the National Guard individual returning?
Well, first of all, I could say this. All benefits are being afforded to all our men and women, our uniformed services, whether deployed or non-deployed. But let me just talk about what has transpired over the last few years. We've developed a very robust and aggressive pre-deployment survey form prior to you going. I went through it myself personally. A post-deployment health assessment or survey form and a re-deployment second survey form, as we call it, at about anywhere from 90 to 180 days. So just to summarize it, I went through a form, had an assessment prior to deploying to Iraq, when I returned from Iraq, and a third one about, say, 90 to 180 days upon returning. And what that's designed to do is identify what are some of the issues that you had prior to your going, what are issues you develop upon return, and what are some of what we call delayed or latent issues, whether it be mental or adjustment back to society within, say, 90 to 180 days. And we have a very aggressive mental health program, not only while you're on active duty, but also in partnership with a with the Veteran Health Association Administration to also try to get that captured. If you look at the current operation compared to World War I, World War II, when you were injured and we got you to a field hospital or what we call a MASH hospital or Battalion A station, and by the time we got you back to the United States, it was normally about 2 to 3 weeks. You got on the ship, you were stabilized, and on your way back, you had time to sort of readjust. You can be injured right now in Iraq or Afghanistan or anywhere in the world where we have our men and women deployed, and you can be back on U.S. soil within 48 to 72 hours without going through this entire process. So part of this is we got to make sure that all along the way we're doing some type of assessment, which we are, of our men and women from a mental perspective, trying to do early detection and treatment, traumatic brain injury. And if we cannot take care of our system, then we have a very robust network and our managed care support contractors who assist us, as well as they transition from our system, Department of Defense, over to the VA, making sure that there's a smooth handoff. And we're working those issues every day right now. This whole process of mental health, post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain is going to take the continued coordinated effort, research, and all the things we talk about as we go in the future.
General, along the same lines, life after sustaining a serious injury can be fraught with many difficulties for our service members, especially with the loss of a limb, eyesight, or some life-changing injury. Can you elaborate on the efforts and initiatives being pursued to facilitate service members from deployment back to employment and integration into the workforce?
Absolutely. We have a program. We call it the Computer Application Assistant Program, better known as CAP, and it uses some computer technology. And part of that program is that if you have, say, an injury whereby you're blind, well, we have now have computer technology using things like Braille. If you lost hearing, you can still use your eyesight. Or if you lost a limb, you've got prosthetic devices that can teach you how to do all kinds of typing and additional things. That's part of the overall program going from deployment to employment, as we call it. We've been working with the Veterans Administration, the Department of Labor. We had a conference last August here in D.C. We had all those agencies coming together saying, what can we do to go from deployment, get them stabilized, then back to employment? There's a huge effort out there among the American Corporation, the veteran agencies, and others to employ the men and women of our uniformed service who are not allowed to stay on active duty due to inability to do their current military job, but they can't be reclassified into another job. So that program is up and running. The key about that program, we need to make sure that program get more publicized and we get more exposed the men and women about the program as well as their leadership. I would highly recommend sometime in the future that just like we have in this talk show, that we allow you to interview the individual who runs that program, Ms. Dana Coins. It's a very effective program. It's being highly used by a few, but yet there's room for a lot more to use the program.
That's fantastic. What are some of the innovative ways TRICARE delivers health care services and sustains the health of our armed forces and their families? We will ask Major General Elder Granger, Deputy Director, TRICARE Management Activity, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.